If everyone would please start getting to their seats, we're a little behind schedule. We'd like to start in a few minutes, so if you please start finding a seat.
All right, there you go.
No door prizes unless you sit down. Okay, she won. Okay. Do you have the agenda?
Well,
do you have the program agenda? Okay. You might keep it close by. Okay. Okay, I'll call it together. Okay. This is welcome this evening. This is Gene Lozano, the first vice president, opening the second general session of the fall conference and convention of the CCB. Hope you had a good dinner and are ready for a very interesting evening ahead of us, including elections afterwards. So please stay close by in addition to the door prizes. So the first thing I'd like to do is see if there are any announcements anyone would like to make before we start our program.
Mr. Chair.
I recognize somebody to my right, the left in the audience.
It's Judy Wilkinson.
Yes,
Kahlua is looking for members. We have a slogan that says, anybody who reads should have some Kahlua. So... Braille Revival League has generously allowed us to share their table, and I will be there most of tomorrow collecting dues. And we're looking to be the chapter that bills the most members for this cycle. So come and join. We need your membership. We're doing exciting fundraising things. So we look forward to having new members. Thank you. The dues are $20 a year, and part of that goes to the National as well for their advocacy and good work.
Okay.
Okay, how can we get hold of you, Judy?
We'll be at the BRLC table, but you can also call and leave me a message in room 514 and I'll find you.
Okay, thank you. Any other announcements?
Okay, this is Artis Bazin, president of the Glendale Burbank chapter. We have two booths in the exhibit hall. We have a party light lady where anything you buy from her, we get 50%. She's selling candles and all kinds of things. Plus, we have our great business bags and some candy. So please come and see us.
This is Dave Jackson, the membership chair, inviting you all to come to our membership breakfast tomorrow. It should be pretty exciting. It's 7 a.m. to 8:30.
Peter, are tickets still available for purchase this late time?
We could probably, if we have one or two people that really want to attend, we could probably squeeze them in.
And they'd have to let you know now?
Yeah. I mean, registration's closed. I mean, okay. We just take them on the honor system.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm not going to turn anybody away. If you guys need cadet tickets, they'll be available up through 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. And banquet tickets are also available up through noontime. So please pass the word around. If anybody needs to purchase additional Kaduk luncheon tickets or the banquet tickets. For Kaduk, it's 10 o'clock, and for banquet, it's noontime tomorrow. And also, I'd encourage each member needs to check out both exhibit rooms, the Columbard, Moselle, and Burgundy Bordeaux. The Colombard Moselle is across the way from the registration, CCB registration table. And around the corner is the other room.
Okay, let's do more announcements. Go ahead.
This is Donna Sanchez, and the CCLVI large print document has been completed, and if anybody is interested in a copy, they can call Bernice Kandarian at 1-650-969-3155, or you can call myself, Donna Sanchez, at 408-377-8311.
Large print documents. Guidelines and best practices for producing large print documents.
Okay, thank you.
We have one more.
This is the last announcement.
Thank you. This is Mary Beth Randall with Guide Dog Users of California. I hope that there'll be people that are going to come with us to breakfast, but we also are taking our memberships at our booth in the exhibit hall, and it's $20 a year. It gets our magazine as well as CCB and Guide Dog Users Incorporated's information and all of that. And also we've got a 50-50 raffle. They're a dollar each or six for $5. And so we hope to see everybody tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, everyone, with your announcements. Next one is remembrances. If somebody would like to share with us the passing of a member of CCB since our last spring, the spring convention, if they would stand up, that might be the easiest thing for our microphone handlers. If you could stand up, and I apologize if it takes a few minutes, but if you could, so you can be recognized. No one's standing up. That's.
This is I'm Robin Rader from the San Gabriel chapter of CCB. We lost a member of our chapter, Everett Clark. He was sick from March to June that I know of, but may he rest in peace.
Yeah. Amen. Okay, maybe okay.
Well, I think the reason I hesitated was that I'm not very good at remembering. I'm very good at forgetting. And, it seems like we've lost a lot of folks. I just heard the other day that, a lady that I've known for a long time, Zeta Albee from Missouri, just died the other day. And, of course, we just lost Roy Ward last week. He was a 90-year-old or so from Virginia. Used to be with the Virginia Commission for the Visually Impaired and was a long time. He was a pillar of the Council of Families with Visual Impairment. And we also heard of the death of Lola Siren. You remember?
Oh,
some of you remember Walter and Lola and their daughter Donna.
Right.
They were all ham operators. They were at the ACB convention time. Walter was a vendor. And so Lola, Walter died a few years ago. Lola just died in and she was 86. And I'm sure there are more, but
okay, thank you. I think Ken is asking for
I'm on my way. I believe it was Stockton, Bob Slauson.
Oh.
And that was just a week or two ago. So Bob was, of course, a longtime member, and I certainly remember him with the conventions, the ACB conventions in California with his wooden nickels. He had the little shop up there so that we could all get snacks in his hospitality area.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Elena. Okay. Then let's have a moment of silence and in remembrance of the passing of these members. Okay, thank you very much. Our next agenda item is the credentials report. In our chair of the credentials committee, Rob Turner, will be taking over right now. Rob.
Thank you, Gene. I'll present my report. I want to first say that we do have a new committee member, and that's Pam Pology. And so you will notice that your chapters have lost a vote since I gave my report this morning. And that is because somehow, I can't imagine how, but somehow inadvertently I calculated the number of votes on the total members rather than the home chapter members. So I've taken care of that. So I don't want anyone panicking if their chapter has one less vote, which about four or five chapters will. And I also have to say that that was the catching of my error was due to the new committee member, Pam. So so we thank her for setting us straight here. So we'll begin. We've got the ACB Capital Chapter President, Deborah Thompson. 40 members, 8 votes. Delegate, Tuan Yen. Alternate, Joni Patchy. Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter, President, Irene Nunez. Members, 16. Votes, 5. Irene Nunez, Delegate. The alternate is Alan Ramos. Alameda County Chapter, President, Preston Moses. 17 members, 5 votes. Delegate, Katrina McCurdy. Alternate, none. The Association for Multicultural Concerns, AMC, President Lillian Scafey. 30 members. It's a statewide affiliate, so 5 votes. Lead delegate, Don Brown. Alternate, Andrew Kohlmeyer. Bayview Chapter, President Sherry Gabrielson. 53 members, 11 votes. Delegate, Steve Fort. Alternate, Connie Skeen. Blind Students of California, President Lena Bandy. 21 members, a statewide affiliate, 5 votes. Delegate, Lisa Cushman. Alternate, Lena Bandy. Braille Revival League of California, President, Steve Fort. 48 members, statewide affiliate, 5 votes. Delegate, Marlene O'Neill. Alternate, Keith Johnson. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCCLV. President, Bernice Kandarian, 101 members, a statewide affiliate, 5 votes. Delegate, Donna Sanchez, alternate, Bernice Kandarian. California Library Users of America, President Judy Wilkinson, 20 members, statewide affiliate, 5 votes. Delegate, Judy Wilkinson. Alternate, Jerry Arakawa. Coachella Valley Chapter, President Linda Samulski. Is Linda in the room? Oh, wonderful. 11 members, five votes, and Linda Samolsky is the delegate, with the alternate being Minna Musamam here. Let's see. Musamami. I don't know how to pronounce it, so sorry. Pardon? Musami. Got it. Very good. Compta chapter?
Yes, sir.
President Michael Williams. Yeah. 50 members, 10 votes. Delegate Michael Williams, alternate Jeffrey Sims. Contra Costa chapter. President Maria De La Torre. The number of members, 14, 5 votes. Delegate Gabe Griffith, no alternate. East Los Angeles Valley chapter. President Charles Navarrete, 31 members, 6 votes, delegate Louis Herrera, and alternate Marie, without an A, Herrera. Glendale Burbank area chapter, President Artis Bazin, 30 members, 6 votes, the delegate Anthony Signorello, the alternate Artis Bazin. Golden Gate chapter. President Dr. Martin Jones, 28 members, 6 votes. Delegate Warren Cushman, no alternate. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind. President Penny Valdivinos, 20 members, 5 votes. Delegate Pat Leung, alternate John Ross. Greater Long Beach chapter, President Mike Conrad, 22 members, 5 votes. Delegate Robert Wendt, alternate Aisha Wendt. Greater Los Angeles chapter, President Pam Metz, 24 members, 5 votes. Delegate Pam Metz, alternate Melissa Hudson. Greater San Joaquin Valley chapter, President Roger Hood, 23 members, 5 votes. Delegate Tom Randall, no alternate. Guide Dog Users of California, President Mary Beth Randall, members 16, a statewide affiliate, 5 votes. Delegate Ann Kaiser, alternate Mary Beth Randall. Orange County chapter, President Andrea Pitzenbarger, 20 members, 5 votes. Delegate Debbie Kessler, alternate Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker. Redwood Council of the Blind chapter, President Larry Hall, 54 members, 11 votes. Delegate is Larry Hall. The alternate is Eric Smiley. And welcome back, Eric. San Bernardino chapter. President Theodore Wilbrecht. 69 members, 14 votes. Yeah. Yeah, they had 47 last year, so big, big increase. And delegates Theodore Wilbrecht. The alternate is Gene Brannon, San Diego Braille Club. President George Drain, 42 members, 8 votes. The delegate, Charlene Ornelas. Alternate, Joseph Lopez. San Diego chapter, President Larry Freeman, 25 members, 5 votes. Delegate Doug Martin, alternate Patricia Davis. San Francisco chapter, President Linda Pearl, 32 members, 6 votes. Delegate David Jackson, alternate Linda Pearl. Oh, it's the other way? Well, okay. I wish you would have told me that this morning. Okay. Well, anyway, San Gabriel Valley chapter. President Donna Pomerantz. They've got 60 members with 12 votes. Delegate Pat LaFrance Wolf. Alternate Richard Moore. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. Mike Keithley, president, of course. Let's see. We've got 81 members with 16 votes. And the delegate is Roger Peterson. The alternate, Susan Hyatt. And that is the end of the chapters that are here. The chapters that are not seated are going to be mentioned now. We'll go to the start with the Antelope Valley chapter, the Butte County Council, El Dorado County chapter, High Desert chapter, Humboldt Council of the Blind, Inland Empire chapter, the Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni Association, Pyramid chapter, Randolph Shepherd Vendors, California, San Mateo, Solano Adult Blind, Yosemite Gateway, and that's the final chapter that isn't here. So I want to thank the membership committee in particular for all their assistance. They made a heck of a lot of phone calls. My job's been a lot easier the last couple of times because Donna doesn't require the Braille. So it's much easier just to give her a computer file. And I also do want to thank my committee members, Steve Fort. I haven't seen Coletta Davis. Oh, she's here too. All right. So thank you too. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
We, the Credentials Committee has given a report and made a motion to approve the report. Is there a second? Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay. Let's have one door prize. We have a Robert Daly book on cassette.
Nowhere to Run.
Nowhere to Run.
Okay. Hey, this is great. All righty.
Gene was on it. Would you believe it?
Ah!
Donna did the same thing. You want to do
another one? I was, folks.
All right. They got it.
Okay, we'll do another one. I'll take the cassette, though. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, okay, I'll take the next one from the top.
The next one's yours. Yeah. You better run.
Exactly.
Penny Fraser, and this is a Harry and David Trailside Snacks. Harry and David Trailside Snacks.
Okay, you want to just say it?
Okay. Go ahead. The prize is a Harry and David Trailside Snacks, donated by Linda O'Neill, ACB Capital Chapter. And Rob drew the ticket, Penny Fraser.
Penny's not here?
She's not in the room.
Okay, let's pull another one.
One more here.
Oh, you are Penny?
Penny Fraser?
Oh.
Let's not try that.
Vivian Younger.
Vivian Younger. Next, pull another one.
Not doing too well here. We're eating late dinner. It is Art Manzanares.
Art Manzanares.
Music.
Yay!
Good job, Rob.
Thank you. That's
Okay. Yes, Art's here. Hang on a second, everyone. I was buying some time. I seem to have a habit of spilling water on my notes and things. I know that's a bench. When you're a techie and you have it on your computer, right, and rely on the Braille, and the Braille paper, sometimes I think it's like rice paper. It just melts as you're reading. So I will do my best with a little bit here. We're honored this evening to have our first speaker, Dr. David Liao, who is a board-certified and fellowship-trained ophthalmologist specializing in the medical and surgical treatment of retinal disorders. He has received his medical doctor and PhD from the Medical College of the of Virginia, and he will correct me at this thing, at the University of Virginia. This is dissolving, like I said, is real quickly. University of Virginia University, and I really apologize. He also has undergraduate degrees in biology and electrical engineering that he got from the University of Maryland. Yay. A few people from Maryland?
Yeah.
Okay. And he has been in his practice right now, and he'll tell you about the organization. I think it's Retinal Victory Associates Group, Medical Group. Is doing work with macular degeneration and other retinal disorders and conducting a lot of clinical trials. He was highly recommended to us by Friends of Fighting Blindness. So let's give Dr. Liao a big hand.
Hi, Gene. Thank you very much.
I apologize very much, really.
Oh, I'm surprised you remembered all that. I can hardly remember that myself. So, but thank you again. And thank you. Oh, that's right. Thank you very much for having me. Tonight, I'd like to just kind of give a little bit of a talk about some of the clinical trials that are going on in different types of retinal diseases, and hopefully you'll find that interesting. And if you have any questions, please just kind of stop me and ask, okay? Okay. So there are different types of retinal degenerative diseases that you may have heard of. One of the most popular, or one of the most common is, popular, I don't know about that. common, yeah, let's retinitis pigmentosa. Yep. There are other other inherited diseases such as Leber's congenital amaurosis and Stargardt's disease, and there are a couple of trials specifically that I'd like to talk about those as well. So when we think about strategies for trying to treat these types of retinal degenerations, there are a couple different categories that we can think about them in. Number one, there's some sort of problem with a gene or protein somewhere in the body, and if we could prevent that kind of damage, for example, through gene therapy, that's one way of stopping things. So that's one approach. The other approach is that if you can't stop the problem with the genetics, you can sometimes prevent further ongoing damage to their retinal cells and the cells in the eyes. So that's a second approach. And the last approach, if really none of these other approaches could work, is you could try to replace or transplant, for example, tissues that have already been damaged and try to restore their function. So those are the three kind of general strategies. So let's talk about Leber's congenital amaurosis for a second. That's a very early on. I can see this gentleman here is. it's a very early onset and severe retinal degeneration, and you get visual loss in infancy and loss of even pupillary responses to light. There are multiple genes that have been described. Most common of which includes the RPE65 mutation and also LRAT mutation as well. And the RPE65 mutation is about 6% of all mutations in Leber's congenital amaurosis. And the protein... What's that? That's right. Yeah, the... That as well. But these proteins actually compose a they play a key role in the visual cycle. Basically, light goes into the eye and it induces changes in the different proteins that are in the layers of the retina. And those, when they change configuration, allow us to transmit the information back into the brain and perceive things as vision. And one of the enzymes that catalyzes conversion of a specific molecule called 11-cis-retinal, which is important to the visual pigments, is broken, basically. It doesn't work. So, obviously, vision is impaired in those cases. The rods, the photoreceptors, are unable to respond to light, and therefore you get really immediate severe vision loss. And then afterwards, you'll get degeneration of the surrounding rods and cones as well. One approach that has been tried, and this clinical trial is taking place, I believe, in Europe and Canada right now, is replacing that molecule, 11-cis-retinal, with a synthetic precursor. And that has been actually shown to kind of vision as well. They've tested about 12 patients so far with the RPE65 and the LRAT mutations, and they actually got folks to have some visual improvement. It was modest, about 3 to 6 lines of vision on that eye chart for about 2 of the patients in there. They've also shown that the field of vision improved somewhat as well. So those are hopefully, that trial is going to be recruiting more currently just in Canada and Europe right now. So another approach to treating Leber's has been through gene therapy. And a few years ago, there was a very famous example of this where actually dogs have a similar mutation, and they can get Leber's as well. And they actually tried to do gene therapy in these dogs. And what they did was they took the deficient gene and put it in a virus. Now, it's not a virus that is going to give you a cold or flu, but it's been replaced with the functioning gene. And they injected into the eyes of those dogs, and lo and behold, those dogs actually started seeing. If you walk them through an obstacle course, for example, they would run into things. Once they had the injections, they could actually navigate the course a little bit better. They could also, when they made recordings of the electrical activities from the eyes, they could actually see that the rods and cones were responding to light. And this kind of really kicked off a lot of interest in gene therapy. And the trials have actually been proceeded in humans, actually, now. There are a couple sites, one in Philadelphia, University of Pennsylvania. There's one in London as well. And they do a similar type of thing. What they do is they take the virus, and it's a surgery, and what they do is they want to deliver that virus to the place where it needs to get. So what they'll do is they'll go into the eye, and then right underneath the retina, they take a very fine needle and put a little bit of that virus inside the retina so that it can go into those cells and kind of replace that gene that's been missing there. And there's been a few years of follow-up now, and a lot of the patients actually improved. Some of them not, for example, the vision on the eye chart, but their visual fields have been able to improve. They're actually, if you recall, their pupils, some folks, their pupils don't respond to light, but then their pupils started responding to light, showing that the light is actually getting in there and getting received. Also, when they've done MRIs of the brain, for example, where the visual areas are in the brain, those areas have started lighting up and started working again, showing that some light is getting in there and causing some function. So hopefully these trials will continue. So those are a couple ways that folks have been attacking labors, for example. And it's pretty amazing that a condition that really was untreatable before, there are avenues of treatment that are going to be available. Okay. They're also looking at a similar type of gene therapy for Stargardt's disease. The gene in Stargardt's disease codes for an abnormal protein transporting in the retina. And they're actually looking at doing similar types of experiments, or not experiments, but clinical trials, where they do the same thing. They put the correct gene in a virus and actually administered into the eye and see if that's going to replace the function. So hopefully we'll get some results from that as well. Currently those trials are recruiting in Oregon and France. Oregon. It's Portland, Oregon. It's at the KCI Center, I believe, in Portland. Yeah. So let's move on here. Let's move on, and we're going to talk about neuronal survival agents. Sometimes we can't prevent or fix the damage that's already been done, but how about trying to preserve the function that's still there? One interesting way of trying to preserve function that's already there is putting growth factors into the eye. If you recall, in some retinal degenerations, there's an initial damaging event or a gene that's not working, but later on the surrounding tissue starts to atrophy and degenerate. And perhaps growth factors might be able to make those cells a little bit more healthy. A growth factor in particular is called ciliary neurotrophic factor, and actually they've been able to put it into the eyes in patients with retinitis pigmentosa or certain kinds of macular degeneration called geographic atrophy, and it's had some interesting effects. The technology is pretty interesting. What they do is they actually have cells that are encapsulated in just like a little pellet, and it's a surgery that they put inside the eye. The pellet is smaller than a grain of rice. And the cells actually, they get nutrients from the body, but they can't get out of that little device. But the growth factors that they're producing, they've been specially engineered, come out and actually get into the retina. And it's been shown in folks with both retinitis pigmentosa and the geographic form of macular degeneration that the retinal thickness in patients who have had this implant actually increases over time. Folks haven't really noticed a benefit as far as vision goes, but at least vision has stabilized, hasn't gotten worse. So that's a benefit. Now, the technology could also be used, for example, not only to put in ciliary neurotrophic factor, but any type of growth factor that you can imagine. So not only is this interesting from a standpoint of just the ciliary neurotrophic factor and its beneficial effects, but also it could be used to put in all sorts of other types of growth factors that could be used in the future. So technology is definitely advancing. Okay. Let's move on to something that's probably gotten a lot of press recently, and it's stem cells. Those are certainly very promising. There are a different number of types of stem cells that can be used. There are embryonic stem cells that can be harvested apparently from embryos without damaging the embryos, and those can actually differentiate into different types of cells, eye cells, skin cells, what have you, and those have real potential. There are other stem cells that can be harvested from umbilical cord or placenta, for example, and those can also differentiate into the types of cell you need. So that's one way of trying to kind of replace tissue that's already been damaged. One interesting line of work is replacing the layer that's underneath the retina. It's called the RPE. It's called the retinal pigment epithelium. In diseases such as Stargardt's disease and different types of macular degeneration, that layer is actually very thin. It atrophies. And folks have wondered if you could replace that layer with the retina over top of it, get more healthy and start working. So there are actually a couple trials, one with Stargardt's disease and one with age-related macular degeneration, where they're actually doing a surgery. They have these human embryonic stem cells that they've got to transform themselves into this layer of retinal pigment epithelial cells. And what they'll be doing is they'll be doing a surgery where those cells are injected underneath the retina into the damaged area, and to see whether they could survive and actually improve vision. So those are two also ongoing trials. The Stargardt study is actually being done. One of the sites is here in Los Angeles at UCLA at Jewel Stein. Okay. And the last thing I'd like to talk about that is fairly interesting as well is retinal prosthesis. We don't have the ability to transplant retinas right now because the retina is a nerve tissue, for example. You may have heard of folks who've had corneal transplants, for example. They've been doing that for a long time because the cornea is just the clear window into the eye. But the retina, unfortunately, once that's damaged, we can't replace that. What they've been working on is a retinal prosthesis, and it doesn't replace the retina, but what happens is there is it's almost like a microchip. It's a set of electrodes that get placed by a surgical procedure into the eye, and it actually lies on top of the retina, and it will stimulate the retina, and then to try to stimulate the nerve that goes back into the brain and to deliver some kind of images. And what that does is they have a actual, like a camera that you wear on glasses, and there's a computer there that actually transmits the signals that the camera sees into electrical impulses that are conducted into the electrodes that are sitting on the retina, and that provides electrical stimulation and kind of stimulates what might be happening if the eye was actually seeing. And in fact, there are a couple patients at the University of Southern California that are involved in that trial, and they've shown that vision isn't perfect by any means, but folks can recognize outlines of things, large letters, for example, shapes. So that's a very interesting thing that's going on. I believe they've also tried it in Europe, and they're moving towards getting approval of that for the European market. Also, they're improving the technology. I believe the current model has 16 electrodes, and that can only provide so much information to the retina, but they're working on getting even higher number of electrodes to provide perhaps even better resolution. So I guess that's it for the talks. Anybody have any questions?
And if people would, again, stand up so Ed can get to you and see where you are.
Hi, I'm Warren Cushman.
Hi, Warren.
I have a question. When I was born, I was diagnosed with
congenital amaurosis, but I wasn't told which type. So is there more than one type of congenital amaurosis?
Yes. Yeah, there are different types of genetic mutations, and I believe there you could have genetic testing to see what type of gene defect there is, for example. Yep.
Yeah, I had a trabeculectomy that went bad back in 2004.
Uh-huh.
And the retina
Please identify yourself, please.
My name is Bill Santley. I'm a friend of Lisa Cushman. I had a trabeculectomy that went bad. At least to my knowledge, it felt as if there was an explosion back there. Something had gone wrong. I don't know what. At one point, the retina was detached. It got reattached, but I'm not getting any current going through there. I'm not getting any vision going back from the retina. And I was just sort of wondering, with the camera that you're talking about, I'm sort of concerned about frame rate. I mean, how framey would this be? I mean, with the electrodes and that kind of thing, it almost sounds like you'd have a very slow frame rate, almost like a movie camera.
Right, yeah, that's a great question, actually. You know, in your situation, that electrode really relies on the nerve that conducts the signals from the retina back into the brain to work. If you've had damage to the optic nerve, however, which it sounds like may have been the case with the trabeculectomy and perhaps problems with the glaucoma, unfortunately, the electrodes will be able to stimulate your retina, but the signals may not be able to get back into the brain. So that's a limitation of that device. There are some devices that I have heard about that they're working on that actually they can try to stimulate the visual cortex area, and you could theoretically bypass a nerve that wasn't working in that way. And then the other answer to your question, whether it be framed, the images that folks are seeing are pretty large images. So I don't think you would notice a framey type of thing. You would just be able to, most folks are able to tell, you know, difference between light and dark, and therefore they could see like a very large, high contrast letter, that type of thing.
Okay, that's interesting because I have what my doctor did say that I was getting third nerve traffic coming from the left eye. So I do see an image in the right eye, but it's coming from the left. So sort of I'm wondering if that would create some possibilities later down the line.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, if the other eye still has some nerve conduction, certainly that, you know, putting like a retinal prosthesis, that would be a possibility for the other eye. The first eye, probably you have to wait for something that could bypass the nerve.
We have five more, Gene.
Go ahead. Next one, please.
Yes, my name is Karen Leger.
Hi.
I have albinism, and I was wondering, do you have any progress going on to improve vision better than 20/200?
200, yeah. What happens with albinism is that in the center of the retina, it's called the macula, and right in the center there's a fovea. And to develop, the reason why we see so well with our foveas is that that's where the highest density of retinal cells are. In folks with albinism, however, we get what's called foveal hypoplasia. That means that the fovea itself hasn't developed very well, and that can happen from a very early age. So unfortunately, at this point, that will probably actually affect the development of the brain as well, the nervous system where it receives input. So that will probably limit the amount of vision in the future. If some of these retinal prostheses get more advanced, perhaps, you know, it might be able to stimulate the retina more, although we probably won't know how limited the vision will be, because it'll depend on the ability of what your brain has kind of learned to see from a very young age. So we'll have to see. But I think the acuities, the visual acuities that you're seeing with these retinal prostheses aren't quite to the 2200 level yet. So there's a little ways to go.
Hello, everyone. This is Melissa Rowe. My husband, Jeremy, he has retinopathy of prematurity. I myself have optic nerve hypoplasia, so I know this wouldn't be of any benefit to me. However, this retinal prosthesis you're talking about, would this be of any benefit to him? He's never really seen all his life, so I was just curious.
Right. It possibly might. Again, that would be similar to the previous question about the albinism. For everybody in the audience, retinopathy of prematurity, little babies who are born prematurely, their retina, the blood vessels in the retina don't actually develop fully. Usually they're fully developed by the time you're a full-term baby, but these babies, you know, are brought out 24 weeks, 26 weeks, very early. And what can happen is that can lead to a lot of scarring and pulling on the retina. And sometimes bleeding. So if the baby, for example, hasn't seen very well from an early age, sometimes the brain may not be able to have developed the ability to see very high spatial acuities. You know, it all depends on how good the brain is able to receive those responses. So theoretically, yes, but it may be limited by the amount that the brain is developed, because the loss of vision has occurred at such a young age.
My name is Mary Lou Baracco. I've had Avastin treatment since 2009. I have myopic macular degeneration in the left eye. I was wondering, since I've been having Avastin treatments, I understand, since they use Lucentis for the macular degeneration patients, and now I understand there is a new medication coming out in 2012 that might replace both of the medications. Is that true, and what is the name of the medication?
Okay, right. So for the audience, if you have myopic degeneration, folks who are very nearsighted, like myself, the eye is longer than normal. And the layers that separate the retina from the back wall of the eye and the blood vessels that run underneath it can be thin. And what can happen is you can develop a little crack in that layer, and a nest of blood vessels can grow up underneath your macula and cause bleeding, swelling, and scarring, for example. Now, drugs like Lucentis and Avastin, they cause those blood vessels to shrink. Because they take away the growth factor that those blood vessels need. You need to get multiple injections, because unfortunately the medicine isn't a cure. It just shrinks the blood vessels, and once the medicine wears off, they can come back again. And the other question is, you know, is Lucentis any different from Avastin? Most retina doctors actually use Avastin. They're made by the same company. Lucentis was specifically designed for the eye, but that is because actually they thought that Avastin wouldn't work. And actually a recent study that was funded by the National Institutes of Health for wet macular degeneration showed that folks using Avastin or Lucentis actually do the same, except Avastin is $50 a shot, whereas Lucentis is $2,000 a shot. So, yeah. So, right. Yeah. So, if insurance pays for it, you know, you may, if you have a high deductible, that's, you know, an issue. So, but that's a, you know, story for the other time. But, that's a, you know, economic question that I don't think we'll be able to answer. But you're right. The next drug in that pipeline is actually called VEGF-TRAP, and is made by a company called Regeneron, and it may be receiving approval actually very soon. And it's a similar drug. It does the same types of things. It takes away those growth factors that the blood vessels need to grow. Oh, yeah, it's called VEGF-TRAP. Yeah, mm-hmm, VEGF-TRAP, yeah. So Exactly, yeah. So VEGF is just an acronym. It stands for vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF for short. Yeah. So, and it may actually be stronger than Lucentis or Avastin. Will it help the vision as much? We don't know. Probably it will. It may actually enable folks to get less frequent injections, which would all, you know, less needles in the eye is always good. So, yeah.
My name is David Jackson, and I have glaucoma that's controlled with medication and through surgery. It's open-angle glaucoma. I have an underlying factor. I'm a rubella child, and now some of the issues that pertains are coming to fruition. One of the issues is retinal deterioration. And I'm wondering if there are any stem cell trials that are going on in the U.S. right now.
Right. So, glaucoma, certainly that can cause a lot of visual changes in kids or adults who were kids and had infections, some viral infections like rubella, that can cause degeneration of the retina later on. Specifically, there aren't any trials for rubella, for example. There are stem cell trials going on in the retina. For example, we talked about the one for Stargardt's and for wet macular degeneration. Those are very specific, where you've got an area of thinning of a certain layer underneath the retina, and you can target that that area with trying to replace the cells. Those are kind of like in the phase one stages. They're mainly trying to determine safety, and if they get any benefits, that would be great. But it's in the very early stages right now.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Gao Dan Chu. I have RP. My name is Gao Dan Chu. I have RP and also have the cataract. And my doctor told me that I don't have to remove the cataract because it doesn't work. And also, I want to know, is there any clinical trial for the retinal implant now?
Okay. So the question was, I think, number one, the gentleman has RP and cataract, and his doctor told him that cataract surgery wouldn't be worthwhile because of the retina not working. And the second one was, are there any trials for the retinal implant? So the first question, that's a common question. Basically, a cataract will block the light going into the eye. It's like the lens of a camera getting cloudy. A lot of times, if the retina isn't working well, the doing surgery for the cataract will let more light into the eye. But if the retina isn't healthy enough to receive the light, then sometimes that won't help the vision. And sometimes it's worth a try. If your doctor feels like that your retina function isn't good enough to warrant surgery, he may just be saving you a surgery, because you might be going through a surgery with risk of complications without. Yes. Sometimes the cataract is so great that your doctor can't see in, and that's a good reason to have the surgery, because then he needs to monitor how your retina is doing. But some of the run-of-the-mill cataracts that might bother folks with better retinal function, it might not be worth taking out in folks with RP, for example. And I believe the trial for the retinal prosthesis, I do not believe they're recruiting. One of the sites is at University of Southern California here. But the trial's active, which means they're kind of following the patients, but they're not recruiting active patients into the trial right now.
Thank you very much, Dr. Liao. That's all the questions I believe we have, and very much appreciate your presentation. Is there a website that you have that, with some of the research that you and your associates are performing, that people could read up further on?
Sure, yeah. Our practice website is www.laretina.com. And another useful site is, if you're looking for clinical trials, for example, is www.clinicaltrials.gov. And you can actually type in, you know, if you type in, for example, Stargardt's and Los Angeles or Labor's in Los Angeles, it will actually give you all the trials that are ongoing. And you can kind of monitor things that are going on at specific cities across the country.
Thank you. Let's give Dr. Liao a big hand.
Thank you very much.
I think we are very fortunate to have him come in. Learned a lot, and I look forward to checking out his website. We're ready for our next presentation. And this is the follow-up with our Mutz Struts fundraiser. And we're trying to get one of our other people up here. But we have Melissa Hudson, Jeff Tom, and I believe Ken Metz is coming up.
I'm here.
So, Ken, since you're statewide, do you want to start? And then how would you like the three of you to conduct this?
Okay, 20 minutes, and we'll take a minute apiece.
1 second.
Well, I think you all got about 10 minutes total. No. We got a little more time than that.
Oh, there we go. Well, actually, I'm going to behave myself, and I'm going to give them each 10 and a half minutes, and then I can leave. I really will yield at first, because I think you need to hear from the two co-chairs, from the region chairs, and that would be Los Angeles and Sacramento, because I want to then pull it together at the end, as well as, of course, thank them. And I think it would be best to start with our co-chair. And because normally it's ladies first, I'm going to start with Melissa. She thought I was going to go the other direction with Jeff when I did that. But I really want to turn this over to Melissa, who just did a absolutely fantastic job down in L.A.
I was hoping to go last. Okay. first of all, big shout out to thank you to Ken and Jeff and Donna on the steering committee. And we've had our ups and downs and, you know, literally probably, you know, even a couple weeks before, are we really going to be able to pull this off? But you know, we did. And, you know, to be fair, if you guys are out there thinking, well, they did it and they know how to do it, we didn't know. You know, none of us went in there knowing how to pull off a 2K, 5K fun run walk. But you know what? We dug our heels in, we rolled up our sleeves, and we researched and we figured it out. And, you know, we went out there and, you know, talked to people and found people who might know and, you know, reached out. And it was, you know, at the end of the day, it was an honor to do it. L.A. Definitely, it was a lot of work. we did get about 100 people to sign up to be there and actually to do the walk, because there was a few of us who did sign, but we volunteered. We actually had about 81 people, I think, who actually did the 2K, 5K. And one of the things Los Angeles did was we really reached out to the running community. So if it wasn't for the running community out there coming out, I don't think we could have, you know, pulled it all off. And we had, you know, amazing volunteers. Now, you know, half of our committee, which is, you know, Ken and myself, CCB members, and then we had, you know, Leslie Park and Mandy Jones, who are friends who are not part of CCB, who, you know, came in and rolled their sleeves up and, you know, helped us pull this off. And a real special shout out to the 19 brave CCB individuals who sat in front of a camera at the spring convention and told us their story. And we made those What Blind Isn't videos, which if you haven't seen those, shame on you. if you do have online capabilities, you know, you can either go to YouTube, you know, go to YouTube.com, and if you go into the search button, type in open quote, what blind isn't, close quote, and the five, and all 19 people, you guys are all on there. There's five different segments, and you guys are all superstars. People who have seen it, who are blind, love it. People who are not blind and fully sighted said they learned so much about. It's in your words, what you told us about what it's like and how we live our everyday lives. You know, and at the end, it has, you know, the link for more information. These are members of California Council of the Blind. And we are super proud of those and proud of you guys to put that together. And that was, you know, part of the mudstrut to get the word out, outreaching out to the community. I will be very biased and say thank you very much to my husband, David, who, you know, sat tirelessly through hours if you ever had to edit everything, not to say that I don't love you all, but if I had to hear you say the same things over and over again for hours and hours, I was pulling my hair out to hear it. But, you know, it was a team effort, considering he sighted and he was doing the editing, but I was listening for the content. I wasn't looking at, you know, you guys or anything. I was listening for the words, those nuggets that everyone has, and I appreciate you all for telling your story and being brave enough and allowing us to tell your story to the world. So it's out there. It's also, I believe our Mudstrut webpage is still up there. It's a blog, so it's ccbnet.org/Mudstrut, and that's on there. There's also pictures from the LA, if you do have some sight, there are pictures. And it was such a wonderful event to see the community come out with their pet dogs or just themselves. And we're so impressed to see, because the whole point is, so what that we're blind? We can still do the same things that everybody else does and enjoy the same things. And they were so impressed that we were out there doing a 2K, 5K with everybody else. And, you know, and every year it's going to get bigger and bigger, but we need your help. If I'll be quite honest, if Los Angeles wants to pull off a second annual, we need you guys to commit to be on committees. Because if we can't pull off a committee, it was four of us. We can't do it with four people. It needs to be more. We need you guys to come out and say, yeah, we'll help and support in any way that we can. We'll make some phone calls. We'll, you know, go out and get donations, or we'll go and try to find a sponsor and things like that. You know, again, we did it all at, you know, at first. But if we want it to continue, we need you guys all to be there and help us make it. Help your voice be heard. Help us raise funds. Help the outside community realize that we're regular people. We're here. But we need your help when we want things to be a little more accessible, and understand why we need that. That we don't just sit at home, that they have that idea that blind people just sit at home and don't do anything. No, we're out there. We're living life. And we're your neighbors. We're your teachers. We're your, you know, employers, employees. We're your friends. We're your family. And we're here. So thank you all. The Mudstrut was an honor.
Thank you. There's the next chair. and another person who really just did a tremendous job, and I'm so proud of him. He thought that after his presidency was over of CCB, that was the end of a lot of hard work. And I think what Jeff Tom had to do up in the Sacramento area and his committee that he'll tell you about, what he did there was probably more than he had to almost do in his 6 years as president of CCB. Jeff?
Yeah, thank you, Ken. There were times I kind of wished I'd gone back to a state working for the legislature instead of, I have to admit. But, you know, as Melissa had said, and I want to echo, it was really an honor to work with Donna and Melissa and Ken. It was, you know, there were definite times when it was a trial because we were learning and we felt, you know, up against it at times, and there was such a concern that we wouldn't make it work. And so, you know, all those stresses and strains, you know, definitely make for, you know, the struggles. But it did come off. It was a profitable venture. In Northern California, I was very lucky, especially the last couple months, to have with me a team of people. Well, actually, one of them, Regina Brink, who is not a member of the organization, but who was with us for a long time, who is an outstanding volunteer coordinator, and we just had lots of volunteers at our event. It was really a plus. But during the last couple months, I had several people that were members, Lynn Doran, Elena Thomason, Ty Lugo, Brian Connors, and others, my wife Leslie, who got some sponsors, and some of them, Lynn and Elena especially, had experience before, and they were invaluable, and I'm certainly hoping that they will be instrumental. You know, don't know whether they will, but I think they will in the future, Mutstruts, if we do continue this, because they are real. You know, some people really have a flair for fundraising. For me, it's a little bit of a battle. I'm more of an advocate. That's what I love to do, but let's face it, you guys, without fundraising, you don't have the resources to advocate, as I said in the President's Dinner for those who were there. And like it or not, all of us have to be fundraisers in this organization. We all have different skill sets. For example, when it comes to Facebook, although one of these days I'm going to get down, and I got my little, you know, book on networking, this little braille book that we got from APH, and I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to really take some time, maybe early next year after I get back from New Zealand or whatever, and I'm going to take some time and start really working on my social networking skills, although I do have a Facebook page, and I occasionally go on it and send some messages, birthday greetings, and whatever. But I am not a good social networking person. Social networking, as was drilled into me by Melissa and others in her group, is absolutely, and I don't mean that negatively, is absolutely essential to enable us to reach out to that running community, something that we in the North just didn't have the time to do, although we started to a little bit. But one skill which I have, and which a lot of people in this room has, and which I did do, and it garnered some money, was to send out an email list, and I sent out a couple of them, to my whole contacts list, or at least the majority of it. And I sent out a blast, and I ended up getting several hundred dollars back. And there's a lot of people in this room that can do that. There's a lot of people that can make phone calls. There's a lot of people that have other skills that they may not have thought about. And it's going to take, you know, what do they say? It takes a village, right? It is going to take lots of people to use their skills if this organization is going to succeed in its fundraising endeavors. And let me tell you one of the principal reasons why that's the case. I'm going to compare our group to another one that did some recent walkathon type things, and that is the RP Foundation. They actually did reasonably well 2 or 3 years up in Sacramento. And 1 year, I think they raised close to $30,000. They had some staff cuts because they had, I don't know all the reasons, but apparently there were money issues. They had staff cuts. It went away. They did well because they had a lot of staff to do a lot of the work that it took. We don't have that kind of staff. Well, Ed could do it if he worked 28 hours a day, you know, but I think maybe that might not happen, you know? And so we have to step up to the plate if we're going to make this work, and that's a real challenge. But it's a necessity because this organization and its future is up to each and every one of us. And fundraising is very important, no matter how sometimes unpalatable it might seem. So, you know, it was a labor of love. I do want to say a couple of things about the Northern California event before I close. And that is there were some unique things that we did do and that really worked out well. We had, for example, a couple of massage companies that basically sold and donated the profits massages for us and gave out coupons to publicize their particular companies. But people, I loved, and everybody I talked to loved their massages. We were able to sell food. I don't think at the Park LA could do that, but we sold some. That made us a little money. But we tried to make the event a kind of a fun event.
I think we need
a combination of things. We need to reach out to the runners community, which Southern California did better than we did. And we did some things, like some of the fun things we had, which I think did go well. So it's a learning experience. We learned an awful lot. But I got to tell you, we really need you to step up to the plate. I hope we expand to the Bay Area. But it's going to take some real commitment ahead of time. We have to have committees in place. We have to have a structure ready because it's just, it's the sort of thing you can get burned out on if you don't have sufficient personnel power to make it work. And with that, I still want to say I enjoy doing it, and I want to thank everybody, including the two to my left, especially that I worked with. So thank you very much.
Okay. First of all, just so we don't forget, probably some of the greatest people we have to thank are the people that participated in the run and walk. The people that showed up and our CCB members that showed up at the event in both areas were just fantastic. But I'm going to tell you something. Without Melissa and Jeff, this would not have come off. You can be a strong chair and everything, but you know what? If you don't have people working behind you, it doesn't work. And that's the whole idea of what it takes in CCB to make our organization work for us. Everyone in here should really be helping on these committees. And a lot of people will say, oh, I can't do this. I don't have that kind of talent. I don't do this. Everyone has strengths and everyone has weaknesses. We don't care about your weaknesses. We want to use your strengths. And that's what's important. If we put all the different strengths that each individual has into making this work, this would be a tremendous fundraiser to keep CCB sustained for a long, long time. And we still have a lot of things to accomplish, folks. And so we only made, and I say only, because I think we can do so much better next year, but we still came out with all the things we learned, all the things we did, the things, and most of the things really went well. A couple of the things we would probably like to do over, we still made over $3,200. Now, that to me is great, but it's the first year. By the second, third, fourth, and fifth year, if the board agrees to allow us to continue to do this, I do think we can get between $30,000 and $50,000 a year. And, you know, that is nothing to be negative about. If you can bring $50,000 into an organization, even $30,000, that's a whole lot more than we've been bringing in. And we have to have this in order to have the services and the programs. You know, I've had people ask me about such things as the crisis fund and all that, and we used the $1,000 that we had. Wouldn't it be great if we had $10,000 that we could put in there to help folks who are blind or visually impaired get some things that they really need to be able to stay in a home and have a roof over their heads? And this is what it's all about. I already have two members that are signed up if the board agrees to do the Mud Strut for 2012, already started. I left this mud strut in 2011 saying not again. And about a week later, I was already looking for committee people. But that is what it is. It is tiring. It's a long process. But with more people, it doesn't have to be that way. It could be fun for all of us. We should be able to get to a point where we have all of our committees together year after year after year, and it becomes automatic. People expect us to have this event the second Saturday, and this is what we're talking about, at least the second Saturday of September. And besides those of us up here, does anyone know why September is a great month for this? That's right. National Guide Dog Month. And so, and I'll be honest, I didn't know that when we picked this date. And it really worked out well. When I went over to Natural Balance Pet Food to get some samples and some door prizes and things like that, I walked in there and the lady said, sure, we're going to donate because it's National Guide Dog Month. Now, when someone from a pet company already knew that, I was amazed. But the point is, you ask and you usually can receive something. You're also going to be told no a number of times. You know what? That's the most difficult thing you do. And a lot of you say, well, I can't go and ask for this, and I can't go ask for that and this. And they're going to tell me no. And you know what? They will tell you no several times. And every time you go to another place, you go in there thinking it's the first time you've done it. You role play, you act, and all of a sudden you're going to find the yeses, because if you allow the no's to get in your way, and not the N-O-S-E, just the N-O apostrophe S, you get those no's in the way, you're going to be very negative yourself. So you have to look at every one of these people as someone who is going to contribute. The whole point is, with the small committee we had, we made this thing work to a great extent. If we had 5 or 10 times the number in the committees, what do you folks think we could really do with this? We could take off like anything. We could go ahead and get the governor and the legislators to do the things that we want them to do. We would have the ability then to run our what we used to do many years ago in having our different seminars in Northern and Southern California. We would be able to go and have our leadership seminars so that all of you could become potential leaders of this fine organization. So with that in mind, all I can say is I really did enjoy it after I had to think about it for a while. Because it is, as I said, you can be... You can really go backwards with that and be very negative. But then all of a sudden we saw something that we thought would just maybe come out even, maybe even a little less, and we still made the $3,250 plus a little bit of change here or there, and it worked. And when it worked on a small level, we could really keep this organization taken care of for a long, long time. The services that we could provide to blind Californians throughout the entire state, we're not looking at north, south, east, west. We are looking at California. We are a state organization. We may be made up of, have a makeup of all kinds of local chapters throughout the state, but when push comes to shove, folks, we're a California organization, and that's what we have to always look at, because anything we do for folks that are blind or visually impaired in California, it's for the state. It's not for Los Angeles. It's not for Sacramento. It's not for San Francisco. The only thing I'd also like to see now is to have a couple of other regions. I know a few folks from San Francisco. I can't say enough of what Peter Pardini did at the end, too. Our treasurer really, really, really worked hard, and he was up there to help take the money that day. And, well, he's good at taking money. But he did. And I know that San Francisco is interested. I'd love to see a couple other regions interested. San Diego has a large contingency of guide dog handlers. The Fresno area has a large contingency of guide dog handlers, along with the GDUC president. Mary Beth. And the point is making this a state organization, a statewide project of a fundraising thing going on and getting the publicity and working on getting more and more publicity as time goes. When we do it throughout the state, people are going to know that the blind folks of California are interested in equality and advocacy. And with that, I just want to thank President Donna, well, actually both Jeff and Donna, because Jeff was still president when I was asked to be chair, and Donna still had the faith in it afterwards when she took over, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have served in this capacity. And Donna did say to me that she would like me to continue doing it if the board agrees to do this for next year, and my answer was yes. So with that, all I can say is thanks to all of you who did help. Love all you guys and all the wonderful volunteers that we met during in both locations, Sacramento and L.A. The volunteers were tremendous. People that we never knew before. People that asked questions about CCB. With all that, thank you so much for allowing me the privilege of serving as chair of this committee. Thank you, and thanks to my coworkers.
Buy the Mutt Strut stuff at the exhibit table. We've got T-shirts and really cool bags and cute bandanas and really cool stuff. The logo's fantastic.
Take as many Soy Joy bars.
Let me ask if you do have any questions. Oh, I'm sorry. If Gene, do we have time if there are any?
About two, max.
2 minutes or two questions?
Two questions.
I don't need to speak.
Any questions?
Okay, we'll get a mic if you stand up.
If you stand up or raise your hand higher than you can stand, that's, you know. And please give your name.
This is Judy Wilkinson.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a couple of, shall we say, hardcore questions. How much of the $11,000 that we spent can be built on next year? And secondly, I'd like to hear more about how many actual other people than our members ran in each event. In other words, how many runners from outside did Los Angeles bring in? And if Jeff knows, how many runners did we have other than our own members in Sacramento?
Runners other than our walkers, either one, other than CCB, I'd have to say in L.A. would be close to 40, would you say?
Yeah. Probably.
Right around 40, Judy. Around half. We had 100, I think it was 105 was the total. And so just almost half of that would have been people that were outside of CCB. And do you know how many, Jeff?
I would say between 15
and 20. And Jeff said about 15 to 20 from the Sacramento area that were outside CCB. Out of 80? Was it 65? 65 or 70. As far as the money goes, yes, I think the brochures and things that we did, I think the publications committee, if I recall, looked at those brochures and I think gave us a pretty good grade on those. I'm going to tell you, the brochures and things that we worked on, the flyers, the brochures and all that, and especially with what Melissa and her husband did with the video, you know, these things were better. We've paid to have videos done before in this organization. And some of the stuff that's on those videos could be used any time and any day to try and promote the California Council of the Blind. It's that good, and it's real. It's off the cuff. It's people who really moved forward to go in front of that camera, as well as the editing that was done by David Hudson. And all these things together gave us a lot of material that we can use within CCB for years to come. So, okay. Yeah, Jeff?
I guess I'd just say really quick, Judy, I don't think I don't think we could really bank a lot, save a lot of money that we would have to, well, let me rephrase that. I think we'd have most of the same expenditures, but I think what we save is a lot of time that it took us to get the infrastructure built so that we could achieve a lot more in terms of getting the sponsors, getting the donors, getting the runners and walkers. That is, I think, what we really save over last year. Yes, yes. It'll cost us maybe the same, but we hopefully will come out a lot farther ahead.
Okay, the last question. All
right. Yes, please, Scott, I have a question for GameMed.
Yes, sir.
For the first year, have you ever put announcement on a newspaper, radio, or TV station? If not, maybe look on that for next time.
To answer your question, Dan, we were looking at that. We did have two broadcasts on KPFK radio down here in L.A. We tried to put the word out. I know we did get one individual for sure, and you guys had in Sacramento, they had some publicity on radio up there as well. And they had one of their morning news people who was actually the MC up in Sacramento. So, yes, we started that. We certainly hope to get more because, obviously, publicity is where it is. But you know what? The more of us who show up to do this stuff, the more publicity we're going to be able to get. You can't be in an event like this and ask people to come from CBS and ABC and all those stations, and if they see 50 people out there, they're going to go to a news story where they can have 5,000 people. So the only way we could do that is if we were to get into that Wall Street thing with blind people. But but I don't think we want that publicity, though. So let's just go for the Munster.
Okay.
Really quick, it does sound like maybe we spent a lot, you know, Judy, the money, but really pulling an event like this off, it sounds kind of bad, but that was a shoestring budget. And what we pulled off was amazing. You know, so it might sound like a lot, but a lot of these events have 2-3 times the budget. So we did a tremendous amount with the small amount of budget, and publicity isn't always, you know, free, and that was difficult to try to get whatever we could free or as low, you know, at cost as possible. So.
And with as little experience as we had going into it. So anyway, again. Thanks to all of you, and we're looking for 2012, and we do expect the phones to ring constantly so Ed can take all the numbers of all of you who want to be on our committees. Good night.
I wish to thank the Mutstrut leadership, senior people, for the work they did, and you know, it's very rare that when you put on the first event that you break even, but this group got a profit, and that's very unusual. So to their credit, they did a fantastic job. Thank you. Okay, the next one is, it's the agenda is our governmental affairs chairperson of the committee. Jeff Tom talk about the work he did in the legislature since the last convention. Let's give him a hand.
Okay, thank you. So I want to try something. While we're going through this, if you have a question about something that I am specifically talking about, go ahead and stand up, and Ed can tell me and recognize you and ask the question. But if you ask a question about something that I am not talking about, you will be banned from asking a subsequent question because I don't want to get off into a bunch of tangents. If you have something at the end, that I don't cover, we'll try to do that if there's time. But I do want to make sure that you get your questions as about something that I'm specifically talking about answered as we go, if you have any. So let's try and see if this works. Okay, as a preliminary comment, before we get into anything specific, and it's unfortunate, obviously it's unfortunate because of Mitch, but it's also unfortunate that Donna is not here because I want to attribute something to her which really has meant a lot. She, when she was formulating her plans for her first term, said, you know, one of the things that we've got to do, and she was coming to me as governmental affairs chair, she said, one of the things we've got to do is that I'm hearing we don't have enough visibility in Sacramento on a lot of issues amongst the disability community. And we're not seen as out there enough. And I want to make that happen. And so I took that to heart this year, as did Frank Welty, and unfortunately he is ill and not here. Otherwise, we'd have a – well, let's have a big round of applause for both Frank and Donna anyway, even though they're both not here. But so I took that to heart, and I wanted to underscore that when we listen to some of the things that I'm going to cover today, because I think that as this year ends, we are – being perceived as more of a player than in the past, and I think that's due to Donna's very subtle nudge in that direction, and that's what we needed. So, first, we'll discuss our bills, and let's get the bad news out of the way first. Although it was not, we got close, and in a way it's not so horrible news. AB 390 was our bill to... require DMV statutorily to send out notifications 60 days or at least 60 days before your state ID card is run out. Now, because of some legislation that Dan assisted in a few years ago, we were really had nothing specifically to do with that. But because of that legislation, they started doing this January 1. However, they don't have to do it, and they could, especially given these physical circumstances, stop anytime they care to. So we wanted this piece of legislation, and we got it all the way to the governor's desk, and the governor said it wasn't necessary because they're doing it, and so he vetoed the bill. But you know, clearly I think... I don't think we're going to bring it back right away, but if there's any threat to for the possible cessation of this practice, I think we're going to go to the governor and say, look, you told us that this was going to occur, and this is occurring and going to occur, and we are going to hold you to that promise. So I don't think it was an empty act that we did, and I think it brought to the legislature in both parties, it was supported in a bipartisan way, the clear idea that that state ID cards are really important and we need to know in a timely manner so that we won't have our ID cards terminate before we go to the airport or the train station or the bank to open an account or whatever and get turned away. Okay. AB 410. And here was a victory. AB 410, through your advocacy, was our bill. Originally arose a couple years ago with some work that Gene Lozano did and others. And what we got ultimately was a bill that requires certain state agencies, the State Building Standards Commission, healthcare services with respect to Medi-Cal regulations, Department of Rehabilitation, and one or two others, to give, upon request, so that it would be less costly, copies of proposed regulations in a format accessible to screen readers. Because right now, there is really no way, because they make their regulations available, you know, via these files, which you cannot read what's being stricken and what's being... added. So now they will have to do this when some policy wonk like Gene or even me requests to get the regulations. So the only problem I have with that is I anticipate Gene's going to give me this host of regulations that I'm going to have to deal with over the next few years. And so I don't know if I like that necessarily. So, but that was a real victory, and I want you to applaud yourselves for getting that through. We had a great author, Assemblymember Swanson, I hope, from the Bay Area. I hope that he can, and I know I've talked to Donna, I think we're going to invite him to our spring convention. I hope that he can address us. His office really worked for us. He issued press releases. that had quotes from us in them. And it was really a pleasure to work with them. Okay, another victory, although only one that could be temporary in nature, but it's a victory for now, AB 727. AB 727 is a bill that could have had some disastrous impacts on our business enterprise program vendors by increasing the percentage of food that has to be quote-unquote healthy food in vending machines. There already are data that indicates that the current law, which requires a third of food to be healthy, is decreasing the revenues that are coming from these vending machines because vendors are really trying to comply with this. And this bill would have raised it to 50%. They wanted 100% and they scaled it back. And by the end, we got a lot of allies. We had a couple of other lobbyists working with us. We had, you know, Frank was working on it. Dan was in there at one point in time working as well. We worked hard. Vendors, Roy and Dave and several other vendors not affiliated with our organization worked hard, and we managed to get the bill killed in committee. Now, it could come back next summer, or they could come up with a new bill, and I think the vendors have a lot of work to do to create alliances with you know, state employees and other groups to show that really, you know, these folks really do want their candy bars. They don't want to have just, you know, sunflower seeds, and because it is really causing a problem, and there's data that indicates it, that it is a problem. There's data in L.A. County that indicates that it is a problem, because they do have a requirement for, I think it's 100% in L.A. County now or something like that, healthy food, as I recall, in their county machines. But at any rate, it was a big victory. We forged alliances. And I think what's just as important, although we didn't do it for this reason, I think we've gone a long way to show the vendors of this state, and I'm not talking about the ones in this organization, they already know it, but to show the vendors in this state, and I think Joni would probably agree with me, that are not affiliated with this organization, that we are really there for them and that we will work as hard as we need to. In order to support the interests of blind and persons who are blind or who have low vision, and specifically our blind vendors. So, okay, let's go on to some other things. Tomorrow, we had a resolution in the spring on trying to get a task force together to look at the issue of quality and timeliness of getting textbooks for our K through 12 children in large print and braille. And it's a complicated issue. I'm not going to go into details, but just want you to know that tomorrow I am going to be going to the Marriott, where my wife may be if she's arrived there by car by now. She's on the board of the California Transcribers and Educators of the Blind Vision Pair, to pitch our resolution to them. We need to work more collaboratively with groups within the blindness field as well as groups in the larger disability community. And this is one of those instances where I am going to try to forge an alliance with that organization, not only on this issue, but other issues where we have a commonality of interest. Our interests don't all there aren't 100% in common. They diverge to some degree. But in most instances, they're very, very similar. Also, we, Donna and I and others, have worked closely in accordance with resolutions passed by both the board and this organization. We work closely with the Department of Rehabilitation and with assistive technology vendors to help in a process whereby Department of Rehabilitation has been consulting, with the Department of General Services to design a new methodology for the purchasing of assistive technology for persons who are blind or low vision. There again, it's a very complicated issue, but we have a seat at the table. I think the vendors appreciate that we are working hard on this issue where we have slight disagreements with them. They understand and appreciate that, but they know that our goal, like their goal, is to help, you know, the consumers of this state. And so I think it's really important that we continue that work, and we are. Let's go. I know I'll try to cover as much as I can, and then Gene will cut me off. In-home supportive services. This is an area that we have really tried to put a lot of work into this year. We become an integral part of an in-home supportive services coalition. We always had people in this organization, such as Jane Cardis and Teddy Joe Remhill, that were very involved in those issues. And now I have been representing us as a member of the In-Home Supportive Services Coalition. There are several things that have gone on in the area this year. One law that has been passed, which will affect every applicant and recipient, is, and I have sent out notices on this for many that have received emails, you're going to have to get a health care certification from a professional that indicates that you essentially need in-home supportive services as one of your conditions of eligibility. Just because you get it doesn't mean you're going to be eligible, but unless you do get it, you're almost certainly not going to be eligible. And then, of course, there have been one cut right after another to the program, and we're going to have, in fact, a resolution on Sunday probably that talks about the latest cut, which is a 20% proposed cut, which will go into effect in January unless state revenue production projections are hit, and it doesn't look like they will be. And in fact, they just to let people know, they are trying to form a couple of groups to educate the press and the legislature on the devastating impact these cuts can have, as well as a group to do community outreach to the consumer community. And if people are interested in becoming a part of a conference call to get involved with that, there's going to be one on Halloween on Monday. And if you want, I can email that information to you or call you with it. Let me give you my number and my email. And so the people who want to get involved in that, just give me a call late Sunday night after I get home or early Monday morning. I'm sorry? Okay, hang on. Let me just give my email and my – it'll get you a mic. And let me get my email and phone number out. Email is J-S as in Stephen, as opposed to F as in Frank, which I am not. S as in Stephen, T-H-O-M at Comcast.net. J-S Tom at Comcast.net. And my phone number is 916-995-3967. That's 916-995-3967. Okay, there's our questioner. You want to identify yourself?
Yes, this is Gigi. I'm from Santa Rosa and have attended several of the Board of Supervisors meetings. And I have a little bit of confusion. Is that 20% cut in hours or in pay?
It's basically going to probably occur, and there are going to be ways of not getting 20% of your hours cut because there are applications you can make. So, but it's not so much in pay as it's going to be in terms of available hours. But it, like I say, there are. It's not a blanket statement, and I don't want to. So, if you want to hear more about it, I would suggest you become involved in this local call, or not local call, but statewide conference call, to find out more. Okay, let me go on with whatever I can get to. There is a little good news in the IHSS front. There's a new program for federal money that the state is going to try and become a part of, which could streamline eligibility and save a lot of money and make things easier for recipients, too. It's called Community First Options Program. They need to establish a council to help design it, a consumer and other providers and consumers. If you're interested, they're planning their first meeting in mid-November. If you're interested in becoming a part of that council, again, talk to me about it. And because they want people who have knowledge of the program and might be, and want to try and submit names of potential people that we might want to put on there. I certainly don't want to do it all for this organization because I don't have as much knowledge as many other people do. Okay. Some of the other things I'm doing, e-health. This is something based on a resolution that Steve Mendelson brought to us a year and a half ago. E-health, we're having a big conference in November. I'm going to attend that on behalf of the organization, learn a lot more of what's going on, begin the advocacy process for us, involve others of you. I know Steve is chomping at the bit on this. We've emailed back and forth. And so that's a topic that I think we're going to we've made some connections with the state on this already, and preliminarily, because it's still got a long way to go, but it's something that we're just going to begin getting into, and we want to get in on the ground floor before they design a system. They have to retrofit, and then we'll be lost. So that's something we're working on. Dual eligibles, those are people that have eligibility for both Medicare and Medi-Cal. They're going to be designing a demonstration project. California is going to be rolling that out in 2013, but the design is beginning now. There's going to be a series of meetings in December on this throughout the state, in San Francisco, Sacramento, and L.A. If you're interested either in attending one of these meetings and want to find out more, or if you have concerns that you want to relay to me or others in the organization, I know Teddy is interested in the issue, Teddy Joy, let us know, and we will certainly carry those concerns. Or if you want to know about these meetings, let me know that, and I'll pass that along as well. Okay, Cal Donchu, you have a question? Something I talked about already. Okay, go ahead. Wait a minute. You have to have a mic.
Yeah. About the, you say it can be 20% cut. Is that additional of the one that they cut? Because this year they cut 3.6%.
Yes. The 20% that will go into effect in January, should the revenues not be met, is in addition to other cuts, some of which haven't gone into effect because of legal battles. Okay. Gene, I think we're pretty close to time.
Yes, we are very close.
Okay. Do we have time for one? I think I'll stop. Do we have time for a last question?
Very last.
Okay. Thank you. This is Teddy Joy. And I just wanted to add about the dual eligible program, that the reason that it's important for us to speak out about this mandated, it's going to be mandatory for dual eligibles to go into managed care throughout the state of California eventually. Right now they're going to do some pilot programs, but that's the ultimate goal. As this year they put all the Medi-Cal people into managed care throughout the state. So just know that the reason that it's important for us to get involved and to speak out at these hearings when they're in our area is to let them know that, first of all, we don't know that these people in managed care are prepared to provide the services that we need for the people who need them. We don't know that they know anything about our particular needs or have been trained. And if we don't speak out, we're going to get the short end of the stick. So that's why that's important. And so I just wanted to also mention that the other good part about in-home support services, good news, was that all the required fingerprinting of both consumers and providers was revoked by a bill that Governor Brown signed, so that that's no longer required.
Consumers
and providers. And so that requirement was eliminated. And I don't know if you care about this, Jeff, but I thought the case before the Supreme Court is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I will mention that if you want.
Okay.
It was only because of time that I didn't. It's a very interesting case that can have widespread repercussions. Essentially, there are provisions that say, and I'll try to do this in like a minute and a half, Gene. There are provisions that essentially say that you have to have Medicaid rates, and Medi-Cal is our version of the Medicaid program where we get federal funding, that the Medicaid rates have to be sufficient to get to meet the levels of care necessary for adequate care. And I'm simplifying greatly on this. However, and so what has happened frequently is that the states, California especially, has gotten their rates knocked over by court several times. So now, because they haven't been reasonable, they haven't figured out a way to do it the right way for a variety of reasons. But now California is trying to get an end run around it by saying, well, even though our rates might not be valid, we don't think that consumers or providers, physicians, anybody, have a right to challenge these rates. And therefore, the only ones that can knock them down is the federal government. Now, the federal government has so little staff that it would take years for them to knock down these rates. So it's now going to the Supreme Court. And if the Supreme Court buys the state's argument, and the Obama administration has actually sided with the state of California, very sadly, if the Supremes buy that argument, this state is going to, it's going to be open season on Medi-Cal rates, and California's rates, which includes IHSS rates, by the way, because our Medi-Cal program funds IHSS. And we already have among the lowest Medicaid rates in the country as it is. So it's a very, very important case to not only to California, but to the whole country. All right, Gene, I want to thank you very much, and I want to thank all of you very much, and I want to encourage you to become involved next year, and anything you want done, help me and Donna and all of us, and Gene, help us do it, because we need your help. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And Jeff, if you could stay close by, because I think we're going to need some of your assistance with the elections, okay? Okay. Before we go on, let's do a door prize.
Yeah.
And while we're just getting set up, why don't you all just don't leave your seats. Just stand up.
I am here.
Maybe stretch a little bit, but don't move around, please, while we get things going.
Okay,
everyone.
Yeah.
Please sit down. We got a door prize. Okay. We got a rainwear jacket and $25 from the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision. And Roger Peterson is the person.
Hey! All right, well, at least he's not a low vision person.
Okay. We're very honored this evening to have our next speaker from the AC Board of Directors, Michael Garrett. Donna contacted him and asked if he and Michael's wife, Peggy, would come to California and help us out with our convention. As you may or may not know, Michael is a native Texan from Fort Worth. He's a graduate from the Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired and graduated in 1973 from the University of Texas, Austin. For at least 28 years, Michael worked in the area of in investments, and so he has a strong background in finance, and that has helped the investment information has is helping ACB because he is the ACB's Enterprises chair. Michael is very active on the national, state, and local levels with the American Council of the Blind, but his interests don't lie just within the blind movement. He's also very much actively involved in cross-disability issues, again, on the state and this time state and local levels with various committees and commissions to deal with the independent living movement. And like I stated just a minute ago, Michael's here with his wife, Peggy, and they both have quite a large family, five children, 10 and a half grandchildren. The other half will be arriving soon. And one great-grandchild. So, Michael's here this evening. He gives a report what's happening with the American Council of Blind. So let's give him a hand.
Good evening, CCB. Good evening. It truly is an honor and a pleasure to be here to share with you this evening. I bring you greetings from the ACB board. It's an honor to serve you because you guys voted to put me in office, or at least I hope you did. And if you didn't vote for me in 2008, please vote for me in 2012. I'll be running again. And that's my first campaign speech. As I said, it really is an honor to not only be here, but to also to serve this great organization of ours. And believe me, we are a working board. We each member of the board works hard for this organization. We are ably directed by our commander-in-chief, President Pomerantz. And guided by his trusted lieutenants, his officer liaisons. Now, they not only are a source of leadership for us, the second lieutenants, they also provide support to the troops in the field. The committees are spread all over this country. Now, Commander Pomerantz has given each of us duties and responsibilities, serving on numerous committees, subcommittees, and task forces, working on projects and initiatives that have helped or will help or be beneficial to ACB in general. For instance, your own Jeff Tom and I have worked together on at least a couple of committees that have drafted initial documents that have since been expanded that will do some interesting things for ACB, and eventually, hopefully, those things will filter down to all of the affiliates all over this country. And your own Chris Gray has headed up our database initiative. So you see, CCB, you guys are instrumental.
Won't work.
All over this country.
Really?
And then we have the troops who are in the trenches on a daily basis, led by the field generals, Melanie Brunson and Eric Bridges, and the rest of their staff, and they're supported by Lane Waters and his staff in our Minnesota regiment. These folks go to battle for us every day. And here are just a few of the things that they're working on for us. ACB began this year with three legislative imperatives. First was the vehicle donation legislation. I'm told that H.R. 860 has over 180 co-sponsors. So it's showing progress. Very good. And then secondly was the prescription drug labeling legislation. At this point, we're still working on trying to gain sponsors to make this a viable bill. So it's in progress, and it's something we're not going to give up on. And then one of these bills that it's puzzling, but the low vision exclusion or low vision device exclusion bill. This is where excluded from purchase by CMS are devices that use a lens. Even the inexpensive assistive aids such as canes are not allowed to be purchased through CMS. We're working on that legislation. What has happened here, though, is that they have created a coalition of organizations of and for the blind, along with vendors who sell such devices. The primary purpose of this coalition is to determine which devices should be covered so that when it does become in the form of a bill, it is more likely to be passed. We understand that this is a long-term issue, but you know the tenacity of ACB. We won't give up until we get it to Congress. The Google survey, I'm told that there were 1,017 respondents who completed that survey. That data is being analyzed, and a report is due by year end. The primary goal for this report, or the results from this report, is to have it published in an academic journal. So stay tuned. We continue to work with Google, Apple, Microsoft, Sprint, and others to make their products more accessible for those of us who are blind or visually impaired. Other ongoing projects include, but are not limited to, meeting with the FCC regarding the implementation of the 21st Century Communications Video and Accessibility Act, one of those victories that we can applaud ourselves for, CB. There are several other issues coming up that will require comments from ACB, such as the Department of Transportation's notice of proposed rulemaking on accessibility of websites and airport kiosks, and the Department of Transportation's notice of proposed rulemaking on airport relief areas for service animals. Comments on these two NPRMs are due by November 28th, and the office is working on that. Then there's the notice of inquiry from the U.S. office, copyright office, on exceptions to allow circumvention of copyright protection systems. Can you imagine that? Comments are due on 12/1, and I'm sure our field generals will give apt comments on that provision. And then there is the Department of Education's notice of proposed rulemaking on new regulations under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Comments on this NPRM are due on December 12th. So there's just a few of the things that the ACB office is working on for our benefit. I'm told that there are a number of other issues being worked on. And the last time I was told that there were some good things that came out, but they said they just weren't able to let us know yet. So stay tuned, and normally something good comes out of what that office does. Now let me make a quick comment on my other hat. As Gene said, I also chair the American Council of the Blind Enterprise and Services Board. And at our last board meeting, which was held in Louisville a few weeks ago, the board went to visit our thrift store in Louisville. And I told the manager, I wish I could bring this group every day because they spend a lot of money. And I told him, I can't wait to see the receipts from that particular day's shopping. And the group did very well. But what I told the board was that store is a model for the kind of stores we're trying to put up. Nice location, clean store with good merchandise. And all we need is to bring in the customers, and we're trying to do that. Going forward, we had a conference call with managers just a few days ago. In fact, earlier this week, we're starting a new initiative to get into the 21st century and have an online presence. And I believe the managers are buying off on it. Several of them are pretty excited. The other ones are not tech savvy, but they're going to come along with us. And so ACBES will have a presence in the new technology, and that's where we're going. So in closing, I want you to know that the battles out there rage. I can tell by Jeff's governmental affairs report that you guys are in the trenches, and you understand what it takes to fight the battles, what ACB is doing at the national level. You guys are on the ground taking care of those things. I can assure you that as a board and as a national office, we will continue to advocate and educate for every person who is blind or visually impaired in this great country of ours. Thank you.
We can take questions if people would like to stand up. And a microphone will be brought to them.
You mentioned...
Please identify yourself.
Okay. Larry Freeman, San Diego chapter. Larry Freeman, San Diego chapter. You mentioned that there a group called CMS through which purchases are made. What is that?
That's the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, yeah.
No other hands.
Should be called CMMS, but I don't know why they call it CMS.
Can't spell. Feds can't spell.
Two questions. One is, will we see those bills you mentioned in ACB emails? Will we see the legislative report on the ACB phone call? That's one question. And the second question is just my curmudgeonly self wonders, did CCB pay for your whole family to come up here?
Oh. No.
No. Yeah. No, they didn't pay for the whole family to come. Not all 10.5 grandchildren, at least. But your first question... Yes, the ACB office is very good about reporting the progress of the bills as they work their way through Congress. So, and as I said, on one bill where there's this coalition being created, they're usually good about telling us about the progress and the development in each stage of these particular areas, because these are, as we said, these were legislative initiatives, very serious and very needed initiatives. We didn't get a good response when we took this low vision exclusion bill to Congress. So we're trying to figure out a way to get it passed. And this coalition, by drumming up support and evidence, this is a way to go back to Congress and get support.
Mm-hmm. No other hands? Okay. Thank you very much, Michael. Okay, I got one announcement before we get on to elections, and that is, well, we'll get to door prizes in a minute or two. That's to keep you in the room. I have been asked by the Resolutions Committee Chair, Jeff Tom, to remind you that we're meeting in Boardroom 1 after the elections, and it probably could be an all-nighter. It's a fun time. It is interesting. The thing is, we need, if you got a resolution, Jeff will need it in the next few minutes, or get it to one of the Resolutions Committee members, but we need the resolutions in writing in some form, not a concept. So the clock is ticking. And after this general session is over with, we will not be accepting any more resolutions for this conference and convention. Okay, hang on a second. I need to confer with a few people. Because Donna's not here, we will defer the CCB president's report. I'm certain that she will get that report to you in some form in the very near future. So hang on about that. And excuse me, just for a second.
Thank you.
And Jeff is going to be helping.
I don't think I need to, but here's the thing, G. What I think you should do, he, Brock should read how many votes they have, and you should read the amount of the votes that are the person casts it as the
result. And I'll be telling.
Yeah, you'll have to count, of course, but as normal. Yeah, so you do the, you know, you have the delegate is whatever, and Gene, you should announce 2 votes for Jones and 4 for Smith. Do you agree, Gene?
Yes. Okay, we are going to now have Rob Turner. He is going to go over again the slate of officers and directors that came out from last spring's convention. And these would be positions to vote on. So just so you know who all has been nominated for the various offices. So we'll start with Rob.
Okay, thanks, Gene. We're going to have 7 candidates, starting with the second vice president, and this is the slate from the nominating committee, Roger Peterson, second president, secretary Judy Wilkinson, and the remaining are board positions, and that's the slate is Artis Bazin, Foster Brown, Linda Perel, Eric Smiley, and Robert Wendt. So those are the... did not have that...
Oh, 5 altogether.
Okay. So we got to have an election for 2 officers and 5 directors' positions. Mm-hmm. Okay. Here we go. Let's get to the first election. Okay, we have for the office of second vice president, Roger Peterson has been nominated. Nominations from the floor are open. Are there any nominations from the floor? Any nominations from the floor? Final last time. Nominations.
I move that nomination
cease and desist,
and he be voted in by acclamation.
Second. Okay, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. Congratulations, Roger. Would you like to say anything, Roger?
Thank you all for your confidence in me. I have tried during this vacancy-filling partial term to do the things I'm supposed to do and help to lead the CCB, and I intend to continue doing that. Donna says she likes me okay, so I guess... I thought that the president's dinner tonight was really good with some of the ideas that people were putting out about what we should do in the future. And now I just hope that folks will be stepping up to do those things after the convention. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Roger. All right.
Right now, let's do one of those door prizes.
Hey!
A 2012 Braille calendar from Redwood Empire.
Yeah, chapter.
Chapter.
Okay. We have a wall hanging, a knitted wall hanging from GDUC and
Meredith Randall. A wall hanging. A knitted wall hanging.
GUC.
Okay.
How about our immediate past president? Stay awake here again.
All right. Hey.
Stay awake. Have him draw something. Yeah. Keep the guy awake here.
Okay.
James Chamberlain.
Oh.
Who?
James Chamberlain.
James Chamberlain.
James in the room?
I struck out on that.
Okay.
Try again. Irene Nunez.
Oh, I know. Irene Nunez.
Yes.
Hey. Great. Hey. Okay, we're ready to have the elections for the office of secretary. And the slate's nominee is Judy Wilkerson.
Wilkinson.
Sorry, Judy. So nominations are open. Are there any nominations from the floor? Is Gabe present, and does he accept?
Yes, he is, and yes, he does.
Okay. Second nominations, request for nominations from the floor. Third and last request for nominations from the floor. Okay, those in favor, aye. Nays, abstentions. Okay. Judy, would you like to identify your supporters? Do you have two of them?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be speaking for myself for a couple of minutes, and then my colleague Steve Fort will be speaking for me. And if time permits, my backup pinch hitter, the chairman of the Publications Committee, Bernice Kandarian.
Okay, and then Gabe, do you have your two?
It's hard for me. I'm one of the speakers this time.
Gabe needs a mic just to tell who his presenters are, supporters.
My speakers this evening will be Jeff Tom and Ken Metz.
5 minutes total.
5 minutes total.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
So Jeff will be first and then Ken.
Okay. Now, both Judy and Gabe will both have a total. Each one will have 5 minutes for their presenters to give their presentations supporting them. So, Judy, the first person?
Good evening. I'm going to speak on three areas: my background, what I would bring to the position of secretary, and what I would bring to the position on the board. My background: I've been a member of the CCB for over 40 years. I know the history of this organization, and I am a member of four statewide affiliates and Bayview chapter. I'm looking forward and on my way and on our way to rebuilding CLUA, the library users, and we're working on the Orientation Center for the Blind as well. What I would bring to the function of secretary: I have a writing and editing career. I taught many years, and I've done freelance editing and writing, and I am proud and honored to be the editor of our Blind Californian. I've been secretary in the past of many chapters and affiliates, and I pledge to do detailed, complete minutes, which will stand up for the record and reflect our organizational memory. I'm a very good Braille reader. What I would bring to my position on the board: I'm very interested, as are all of us, in expanding outside funding, and I will commit to participate hugely in the Mutt Strut next year, whether or not I get this position. And I am also committed to growing my beloved Blind Californian. I don't like the 60-page limit. In terms of fiscal issues, our board is working tremendously hard, but we need to revisit all kinds of issues, including the number of conventions we have each year. And finally, it breaks my heart that 12 affiliates are not here at this convention. We need to work on getting our chapters back, and we need to have our chapters give more back to the state. And I will be glad to work on these areas. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm Steve Fort, speaking on behalf of Judy Wilkinson.
Pardon me?
And I met Judy 2 years ago at a chapter meeting, and I am reminded of what Kathy Skivers, her characterization of Judy as being a mover and shaker within the organization. And I soon came to see why that is. She has a very painstaking and thorough approach to everything that she's involved with. And as BRLC president, I have worked with her in collaboration with BRLC and Kahlua and the luncheons that we've sponsored. And I first thought of my relative lack of experience in comparison to Judy's very extensive experience. And I'm really impressed with her precise analysis of various situations and her use of language. And while she's very exacting and has very high standards, she's also very supportive and friendly, and it's been a pleasure working with her. And in conclusion, I would urge all of you to vote for Judy Wilkinson for secretary. Thank you very much.
How much time do you have left, Peter?
Minute 37.
Okay. I think, Judy, you want to wrap it up then? Bernice, rather.
As chair of the publications committee, I've worked with Judy in her editorship of the Blind Californian, and we have worked hard as a team trying to streamline and reorganize the way that the Blind Californian is produced, and Judy has been hardworking in trying to comply with all of the board's requirements and limitations on the Blind Californian, and trying to include everything that the membership needs to know, and try to get in some enlightening kinds of articles also. So she's been faced with a lot of challenges, and she's working her way through that. I would invite you to consider her as a strong candidate for the position of secretary.
Okay, that's been the supporting presentations for Judy. Now, Gabe's. Presenters, and Gabe has his presenters have a total of combined 5 minutes. Who is the first person, Gabe? Okay, Jeff.
Okay, fellow CCB members, we are blessed in this organization to have two excellent candidates for secretary. I'm here to speak most especially to those of you who have not made up your mind as to which candidate you will support, to tell you why I think that Gabe Griffith, I cannot speak, is the best candidate for the job, no matter what his name might be. Gabe has excellent writing skills, and he has demonstrated them in a number of capacities. I've worked with Gabe on both the state and ACB resolutions committee, And I can tell you firsthand, through many, many long nights that we've spent together, that Gabe is an excellent writer, a hard worker, and that he has a broad understanding of a lot of the issues that are of importance to us. He's also done an outstanding job during the time I was president in editing The Connection. But it is not only his writing skills that came to the forefront in The Connection. It is the fact that Gabe delivers the goods. You know, it isn't, when you get The Connection, you don't just take a glob of material and plop it into an email and send it out. Because of phone constraints and other things, you have to pare things down. You have to try and make everybody happy. You have to do all the things that it takes to get as much information as you can. Gabe was unfailing in his efforts to meet the needs that we had. And I can tell you that working with Gabe was an absolute pleasure during my presidency in terms of not only The Connection, but in terms of the minutes. And it is of such importance that the Secretary and President work well together. And I never, never could have been any happier than I was working with Gabe. Gabe has been active. You know, he's only in his early 30s, and he's been active in this organization for more than a decade. We in the Capital Chapter still want him back, although we can't get him. I could say a lot more, but I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for Ken Metz, and I just want to urge you to consider voting for Gabe Griffith as an outstanding candidate for re-election to the position of Secretary. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gabe Griffith has been secretary now, finishing up his fourth year, I believe it is. And I was on the board all but this year at the time that he was secretary. And what a tough job to do. And you know, people can look at secretaries in so many different ways.